Welcome to the 11th United We Stand podcast of the season. My name's Andy Mitten. I've been in Istanbul this week. I wasn't at the United Braga game at Old Trafford on Tuesday. I went to Turkey to make a film about Galatasaray's mad supporters, and they were certainly mad. We were filming on a street before the game. We were up a street, and they all knew we were coming. They were waiting for us with flares. So it was didn't come on top. Everyone was friendly with us. Well, most of the people were friendly with us. But you never get a dull reception in Turkey, as I'm sure United fans will find out when we go to Istanbul again next month. I'm back in Manchester, and I'm in the office of Champion Sports Tours, which is, I'm with Tony O'Neill. Tony is well known among match-going Manchester United fans. He's the author of Red Army General and Men in Black, two hooligan books. Tony's now 54 years old, a grandfather, and he now visits students in areas around Manchester and talks about his past. Very much sees the hooligan days as his past. He served time for being a hooligan. He met the sports minister when he was 16 years old. And I'd like to welcome you, Tony, to the United We Stand podcast today.
Glad to be here.
From Withenshaw?
Withenshaw, yep. Born and bred.
United fan all your life?
All my life. Since I was like 10 years of age, decided. Used to go to football, like most people my age and older. Used to go City one week, United the next, just to watch football, mad for it.
A lot of bold Mancunians did that, didn't they?
Yeah.
Went to City one week, United next.
Yeah, there's not many people I don't know what didn't do that. Mm. Whether you supported United or City, you went to one game, you had to go and watch a game of football, whether it was at Main Road or at Old Trafford.
So you got to Main Road, but you were known as a Red, but
yeah,
you still watched City.
I used to go with a group of people from Withenshaw. I used to go and watch City, just to be there, mainly because it was just getting away from off the estate, enjoy yourself, have a laugh. Didn't really watch the football that much in them days. It was more about enjoying yourself, getting atmosphere, just up to devilment, really. You know.
And then when you're in your teens, you started going to away games with United.
Yeah, going away all the time. It was just, I used to hitchhike it overnight, even to Wolverhampton Wanderers, which is only down the road. You know.
So what time would you set off for Wolves away, which is only an hour and a half drive?
10 o'clock at night.
And how would the journey go? Or you had no idea?
Well, what we'd normally do, we'd probably meet up with Inshaw, get our bottles of cider and things like that. And then get up to Knutsford, jump on a train, obviously without paying, and then walk through Knutsford, get to the service station or go to the corner of the junction of the M6, stand there, and away we go. And whatever happens, happens. And it's just a regular thing every week, virtually, until that's a lot of the times I was doing that was younger. And then sneak on the football special coming home. It's just great.
And didn't a social worker in Withenshaw offer you the use of his van?
Yeah, we had a yellow van. It used to be an old post office van. We nicknamed it the War Wagon. And off we used to go in there, social worker, and there used to be about 20 to 30 of us, all just drunk out of our heads in the back, which was baffling, really.
What was he like, the bloke?
Just a fool. I think he was studying us, trying to study us and understand us, but he was just one of these middle-class yuppies who came along onto an housing estate, which at the time was the biggest in Europe. And he thought he'd turn people's lives around.
Did he?
Well, no, not really, no, because he made the mistake of letting City fans use it one day. So we set fire to it and burnt it, and that was the end of that.
No more War Wagon.
Well, you just don't have anything to do with City, do you? So,
but you'd go to City, though, even the same lads.
That's
that was
right.
When you were younger.
That's when we was younger. But as you get older, you get your side of a line, which where you're coming from. Well, we was United, and you just don't. You deal with us, you don't deal with City. So we burnt the thing out.
So Withenshaw red or blue?
Withenshaw.
I know you can't say 100% either, because I know blues from there and I know reds from there.
I think it's to me it's red. It always has been red. I've always, growing up, tended to see the City fans as like in the background, but you know, who knows? Who knows? It's just a little game everyone plays on every estate. There's more City here, or there's more United here. It's just, you know, it's just through the times, isn't it?
You didn't just stitch to Wolverhampton, you once stitched to Turin.
Yeah, I hitched it to Turin, set off. I actually set off after the League Cup game against Newcastle on the Wednesday night. So I set off a week before with my mate. But my mate, by the time we got to Dover, couldn't cope with the pressure.
What pressure? The pressure of not knowing where your next living
was
going
to be? Well, the pressure of like staying awake 24 hours a day, sleeping on a roadside, not eating. Actually having no money. And when we got to Dover, it cracked up. Just, I can't go.
She went alone.
So I carried on myself. Great experience.
You made it?
Yeah, I made it all the way.
How many lifts? What? Were you in wagons, cars?
Oh, all sorts. Wagons, cars, stuck in a snowdrift. Stuck
in the Alps?
Yeah, stuck in on top of the mountain. Worst rain of it. The rain, actually, when I was stood on the mountain, just it actually shrunk me duffel coat. It's baffling, really. Couldn't get across snowdrifts. Mental it was.
And when you arrived in Turin, it was like you'd made it.
Oh, I was there. I was over the moon.
And you knew people there? Then?
No. There was no one there for 4 days.
Right. So you allowed yourself plenty of time to get to Turin.
Well, I allowed myself plenty of time to beg for money and food, sleeping in the railway station and that.
How'd you get back?
Sneaked on the plane.
Yeah.
Sneaked on the plane, going back to London.
No ticket?
No ticket, no nothing. I think...
imagine that now.
Yeah. Some people have still tried it.
I was going to say, as I said the question,
yeah.
I would actually put it past some people.
Some people have tried it. Some people have actually tried it on our plane, which is... It's baffling because... But there you go. Then again, the people what tried it on our plane, if they'd have asked, we'd have got them on. Why they didn't ask, I'll never know in my life, because I've always helped people. So, you know, you've got to get home. So it doesn't matter who you are, you don't leave somebody, you get them home. Even if you don't like the person, you get them home.
At 16, 17, you were asked to meet Dennis Howell, who was the sports minister.
Yeah, I was on a bit of a... Not a crusade. I was sort of like being led into the fight against hooliganism when I was actually a raving hooligan at the time. But I knew certain things, certain people, knew what to do. And I met him in Birmingham in his offices. He was the MP for Birmingham then. And he was also the sports minister. And I met him at Old Trafford as well, in the boardroom with... all the officials of United at the time, Edwards, everybody else like that. But it got nowhere because they were just paying lip service. And there was nothing they could do at the time anyway. Because
nothing anyone could do?
No, there was nothing anyone could do. The 70s was the 70s, and everyone, whether it was on the streets, regarding work, strikes, football, nothing anyone could do. What happened, happened. And it was just part of growing up, part of life, part of society. You know, every decade is different than the previous one. 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000, they all change. Everything changes each decade.
What was your most enjoyable decade watching United?
The 70s. Because it actually made me... well, I say 70s. The 70s was, it made me what I am, sort of immune to worry, problems, life. The 70s actually educated me in this society, what it's all about. I've not got a pension. When I was 16, looked at my mum, working her fingers to the bone, and I thought, hang on a minute, you want me to work from 16 to 65, put in a pension? Hang on a minute, what about enjoying life? And to be honest with you, the most people what are worried in this country now are the people looking forward to the pension. who've put hard work all their life for what? Pure worry. So, at the end of the day, I was right that I wasn't going to work. Well, I wasn't going to be told that I was going to go to work from 16 to 65 to look after people who were actually only looking after themselves, which is authority.
You said the 70s was your most enjoyable time. How do you feel about United now? Do you go in matches now? Did you go to the Braga game the other night?
No, like most Mancunians, they just don't bother.
So where, you watch it on the telly in the pub?
I actually watched it at home. You know, I think most people now who have been going for a long time prefer to watch it in the pub. You'll go to the occasional games and that.
But it's very rare. Away games.
Well, it's away games because at the end of the day, you tend to bump into more clued up United fans. Not that a United fan is an idiot. It's just that it's the gathering. It's the social side of it as well, where you tend to get going abroad and going to the away games. Here, you get the social side, and it's more of a whole day. You know, it's. A lot of people just come to Old Trafford now for 90 minutes of the football. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But I wasn't brought up like that. I wasn't brought up to sit down in a seat like most Mancunians, most United fans. So, you know, you tend to go to the ones you want to enjoy and socialise. A lot of it is about socialising and enjoying the day. It's not about 90 minutes football because United, where how I was brought up, you was brought up as a family. You all knew each other, you all looked after each other. Any problems, you sort it out between yourselves. And that's how I was brought up. It's not like that now.
So you go to some aways, and of course you're doing the trips to the European aways. Do you go to all of them?
I'm only allowed to go to those what my wife doesn't want to go to unless it's sunshine. Sun shines out, like in Spain or something like that, I tend to get booted off.
So your wife, Debbie, who's actually your boss,
yeah,
she picks and chooses. She runs the tour company and she says, right, Tony, you can go to Cluj.
Well, I can go anywhere, but then the argument starts where she says, I'm going to Spain, because she thinks it's always sunshine in Spain. Like she went to Bilbao and the sun was shining. Took the daughter.
I saw your customers in Bilbao Airport the day after the game. There was a technical fault with one of the planes.
Yeah.
And it had to stay overnight, didn't it?
Yeah, it had to stay overnight.
It was brilliant in Bilbao, by the way. You missed a good one there.
Yeah.
It was a proper party.
Yeah, you're really cheering me up. No Bilbao plane, technical fault. Good thing. All the organisation worked out right. Hour and a half, they're all back in the hotel. And to the delight of quite a few of them, on the street was a bar, open, ready for them. And a certain bar across the road, which one or two took delight in.
You mentioned a certain bar.
Yeah.
One, I've never seen so many people happy that the flight's cancelled because it gave them a perfect excuse to their partners back home. Look, love, I'd love to come back, but I can't. There's a technical fault with the plane.
Well, it just wasn't. You see, people get the idea it's just lads what go on the thing, and it's not. I get lots of couples, lots of women of all ages. I get all types of people, whether some are scratching a living or I get some who like are driving around in the Rolls Royce. But I was amazed that 140 odd people for the first time were cheering that a plane had actually couldn't fly, because then everybody from all walks of life what was on the plane could stay an extra night and go out and enjoy themselves in whatever way they wanted to. And obviously some, which we all know, go out and enjoy themselves.
So this bar, and you mentioned that there's women and there's a whole spread of people on your trips. I took my wife and baby to Bilbao because it was cheap to go over from Barcelona.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's a good city and the food's great and it was brilliant. The next day, bumped into one of your customers, and a very well-known lad. I'm not going to name him by embarrassing him, but he said, he'd been polite in front of my wife, fortunately for the hotel we had to stay in, there was a bar opposite which was full of out-of-work Spanish nurses, so we kept them busy. Idiot here took that statement at face value, that there really was a bar staffed by unemployed Spanish nurses. An hour later, I said to my wife, isn't it good them lads, you know, helping the Spanish economy? She just looked at me as if to say, do you really believe that?
Well.
And I just, the penny just dropped.
Well, Andy, you are what sometimes call a div.
I was a div then.
Right, because I remember once she came to see me in prison.
Yeah.
And
so you're in prison for hooliganism for how long? For a year?
3 years.
So this is the mid-90s. I've been to Strange Ways twice, right?
Yes.
Once, before the Glazers took over United, I used to write for the United magazine, and I went to Strange Ways as part of a United staff football team and played against the prisoners. It was brilliant. Met loads of people there, and you meet people and they'd say, I'd say, what are you in for? And one guy said, well, apparently I killed my wife. You'd read about him in the paper, and
yeah,
he definitely had done. And the next time I went to Strange Ways was to see you on Christmas.
Yes.
As a guest.
As a, yeah.
I was allowed to take £10 to treat you to a Mars bar and a cup of tea.
That's right.
I've never taken drugs in my life, just not my thing at all. But the night before I went to see you, I was in the company of someone smoking cannabis.
Yeah.
And I went to Strange Ways the next day. Anyone who knows me knows what I'm like.
Yeah.
15 people waiting in the waiting room, and we all got told to stand on a spot, and the police sniffer dog was unleashed.
Yes.
And made a beeline for me.
Yes.
A second dog was unleashed.
Yes.
And came straight for me. And was rewarded each time with an apple. I didn't have a clue what was going on. The prison warder came over to me and said, we're not going to let you go and see Mr. O'Neill because we've smelt something on you. And I'm like, well, what? You know, I haven't done anything. I've got nothing on me.
Yeah.
He said, look, no time for excuses. You're allowed to put a letter of complaint in. Rather than your one-hour open visit where I can buy you a Mars bar or a cup of tea, you can have a 20-minute closed visit.
Yeah, well, a closed visit is not what people think a closed visit, where you both sat on a table and a chair looking at each other. A closed visit is like in this darkened, sealed off, where you're on one side with a visor, which is filthy and dirty. I could hardly actually see you, to be honest with you. But
what did you think then when you got brought through to see me?
Well, what I thought was, in all the times I've had visits, and I've had a few prison sentences, and even longer than the one you came to see me on, you're the only person, you're the straightest person what's actually ever came to see me. And I thought to myself, what's he done, this div, right, to get me in this confined space, for 20 minutes, to be honest, I couldn't even hear you.
Because the glass is that
thick. Because the glass is that thick. I was the prisoner. Yeah, you was the prisoner, and I was thinking, hang on a minute, he's the straightest person what's come at me, and now I'm sat in this garbage hellhole here, trying to shout and listen to you, which was a complete waste of time.
The only other people in there were three Pakistani lads,
yes,
and they weren't allowed their visit. And they pulled me to one side and went, do you want to find out where the warder lives afterwards? And I'm like, no, I'm just getting into a world here. I don't want anything to do with it. I've come to say hello to someone for Christmas.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
This is in the past for you. I mean, you've recently been meeting students around Manchester.
Yeah, well.
What does the 54-year-old Tony say to an 18-year-old? Now, you're a grandfather now. You're not a hooligan anymore.
What do I say? What do I say? Regarding life and football.
Should people follow your path? I mean, what would you tell your grandchildren?
I'd tell my grandchildren that I enjoyed my life, but life's different now.
Mm.
I've had a great time, regardless of the knocks what I've taken in life. But what I would tell an 18-year-old is grab any opportunity you can, and not worry about the future, and not listen. Do not be told what path to go down. Choose your own path.
Education, important?
Education, to a certain extent, is important.
Street education as well.
Yeah, you need street education, but you also need education in understanding when people are telling you what's good for you. You need to understand what their motives are. And I've always tended to explain to people, listen, what they're saying to you, right, what's their motive? And mainly government, MPs, things like that. These people are all short-term, you're here forever. So an 18-year-old really should choose a path, stick with it, and have no regrets, even if it goes wrong.
You could say the same thing about fans and players. The players idolise, but they're only there for 3 or 4 years, or even the club employees. The fans, they're there forever.
Well, you're supposed to be there forever. And I won't go on to my favourite pet subject.
No, we're not going to go. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Your club's your club. Mm. You love your club. You started out, you're brought up, and you're educated in it, and you're there forever. And, I mean, I've got an absolute great life because I've turned my love of the club and everything else into my work. And I've got, I've got the best life in ever.
Do you enjoy going on the trips now? You're still with mates, lads you've known from the match for 4 decades.
Even the 4 decades, even a United fan I don't even know, from anywhere around the world. I think it's just meeting new United fans, sat down talking and finding out where they're from and whatever, and they're asking you questions and they want to know, well, is this right? And, you know, can I wear this? Can I wear that? Is it right? What do you think? What about this? I love it. I've got a brilliant life, and I think a United fan, if he has the opportunity to get here and there or whatever, it's fantastic.
Why do people travel with you?
Why do they travel with us? Because they want to. Because I think it might be the last bastion of United fans who are loyal, who will support the team, support the club. Some people have things what they don't like about it, but you can't have everything, you know. Everything's not hunky-dory. But they support Man United. And everyone tends to look after each other in one way or another. But they socialise. They've all got something in common. They've got the love of Man United. And it'll never die.
What have been your favourite trips abroad?
What's been my favourite trip?
More in recent times, I know you mentioned.
More in recent times. Clues was one, because it was a throwback. It was a throwback to Pexey Munkus.
1990.
I think it was 87, 89. When we got back in Europe.
90 it was.
Yeah. When we got back in Europe, yeah. It was.
A town you'd never go to for tourism reasons, would you?
Well, you wouldn't. You would if you knew what I knew.
Yeah.
And people what went there. If someone was doing a trip tomorrow to Cluj, you'd fill the plane because of what...
Everyone had a good time.
Well, the people were absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. It was cheap.
There was cheap. Well, Pexey Munkus, I remember I was there for a week and my favourite drink was 20 pence for a pint of wine. Well, Cluj brought them memories back. And when there's 9 of you sat down for 3 hours and you're on vodka Red Bulls and your whole bill comes to £8 each, then, my God, that was hard work getting over that. It's at 54, it takes you 3-4 days. Some people even a week to get over that. But it was so friendly. It was one of the best trips, to be honest.
When I see you a lot of the time at away games, you're rounding up people on your trips. The last time I saw you before today
was in
Cluj Airport.
Yeah.
God. And you were rounding up like your flock of sheep to get them all on the plane.
Yeah.
Time before that, Fulham away. All the United coaches had left. You were missing one passenger.
Yes.
I think he was called Steve Owen.
Yeah.
From Stretford.
Yeah.
And he'd had a drink.
Yeah, well, that's the problem sometimes, isn't it?
And I said, "Happy Christmas, Tony." Not now, he said.
Yeah, I was stressed. But then I tend to meet you flying past me when I'm stressed.
Yeah.
And it tends to be after a game.
Is that the greatest challenge, controlling all, getting everyone on a plane, getting everyone on a coach, or are the challenges of authority when you land in Cluj and there's 150 of you? Do people still think these are English football fans, we'll treat them with suspicion?
No. European tend to be like that. I say European, you're French, you're Germans, you're Spanish, sometimes you're Portuguese. Portuguese pretty laid back, so that's good.
And that wasn't all the case. That wasn't always the case. Remember Porto in 97? I remember seeing you there.
Yeah, yeah, but then that was the biggest away following for a non-event.
Yeah, and you won't get that now. The numbers have come right down.
There was 12,000 United fans there.
Crumbling old stadium, Des Santos.
There was 12,000 United fans inside the ground, and the club, I think, gave us 1,500 tickets.
Our allocation was well short of how many.
Yeah, it was a corner.
We had an end, but it was
No, we had the end. I was there a couple of weeks before, having a look inside the ground, and there was actually a workman putting like a little metal fence up as a segregation point, and he said that was our section, a little corner thing. And I just shook my head and thought, this is going to be one night.
And
I looked at the game, I looked at outside the entrance and everything, and I knew it was absolute nightmare. But that day, I think I actually didn't get in the game that day, because I'd gone on one of my mad little sessions. I thought I'd been here for a week. I've done everything, what I've done, what I haven't done. And unfortunately, the brain wasn't working proper. And it came up with a bright idea that to drink a bottle of brandy up a tree, no one's done that before.
So one drink of bottle of brandy to up a tree?
Yeah, just daft, isn't it? It's childish. But then that's what makes me laugh. You know what I mean? It makes me laugh thinking, there you go, thought of it. The fact that I fell out the tree with a branch after two of us had done the bottling. But then again, I'd been on the drink.
At what point did you decide, you know what, I'm going to climb up that tree? That's a good idea. What was the logic?
Logic. There is no logic, but that's the fun of going away. Yeah. There's no logic to stupidity.
And Portugal now, new stadiums, much more chilled. Is there anywhere, what's difficult to go to now? What was Russia like in 2008 for Moscow?
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't go, I was still on my ban.
Yeah.
But
your band's totally finished now.
Totally finished. But I watched them. I took 1,500 people there. And the funny story to that is, I mean, everyone was panicking about visas, this, that, and the other. And, you know, there's an issue about the visa with the authorities that they knew there was never going to be one. But that's another story. But the funny thing is, I took 1,500 people. And I actually never left my office for 8 days. I slept here for 8 days.
Just because it was such a busy time.
All the time. All night.
You're almost holding people's hands in terms of, I'd imagine you get bombarded with questions. Can I take
millions.
Can I do that?
Millions. We've got a kid, a funny story relating to a trip. We've got a kid called Lucky. And he's from, I think it's the West Midlands. And he goes on all the trips and all that. And I didn't actually really know him that well. I knew him and he'd been on the trips and that with other people, and they were nice lad and that. And after a fortnight of the chaos and the madness of getting it all sorted, being in the office being packed day and night, I cracked up to an extent, right? Because I was even being asked, what's the weather like?
Yeah.
2 weeks before, where it was, and like, but you're having to be polite and everything like that. But then his actual name is Steve. He came up to the office and he just asked me one question too much, where I just went. It was like a Saturday afternoon. And I actually picked him up by his throat against the wall. And I just said to him, I said, you're Lucky. Now, his name is now Lucky, right? I didn't mean what I was saying, it's how I felt. I actually explained to him, I just feel like picking you up and throwing you through my window. I said, because I'm sick to death of all the stupid questions, right? Me being helpful, I'm answering them all as best as I can.
Questions about visas are legitimate. Asking you what the weather's like in Moscow 2 weeks before the game.
It's not legit.
You're wasting your time.
Yeah, but loads of waste of time. But I enjoy that side of it, don't get me wrong, because it's funny.
Because you're not saying, why are you asking this?
Yeah, yeah, but it's funny. It's just part and parcel of being part with people.
And you get some characters as well, don't you?
Yeah, characters. You get characters from all walks of life. It's funny, you know. I get blokes there who go to games in the same shirt, you know, and like, just I say, why is that? Yeah, why is that? And it's like, well, it's my lucky shirt. And I'm thinking, how can it be lucky? Because you go to all the games. I mean, I've got a raving lunatic, Pat, comes on the coaches, and I let him run his own coach and all that. And he's 74, and we call him number two. You know, we're taking the mick and all that. But, I mean, I really should sack him. I should have nothing to do with him. But the thing is, it'd break his heart, right, if I sacked him, because he's annoying. He gets on people's nerves. He sort of threatens people to do things, which is not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to ask and cajole and whatever. And he's an absolute raving lunatic, Pat Connor. So if anyone does know Pat Connor and they get in touch with you, they'll agree with me. He's a pain.
And yet, if you got rid of him, everyone
if you got rid of him,
because it's that community you're talking about.
If I got rid of him, it'd break his heart. If I sacked him, it'd break his heart. He says to me that I'd never sack him because the company would go downhill. But there's not one person would agree with that sentiment from him. But if he went missing, everyone would be going, where's Pat? So in one way, it's like a love-hate relationship certain people have with him, because they go, here he is. He's the sergeant major, and he's your typical sergeant major. Jacket, tie on, and his lucky red shirt. Well, his lucky red shirt can't be lucky, because he's wore it all the time. Well, United get beat, don't they?
The superstition thing's really big in other countries. In Africa, where I watched a bit of football, in Turkey the other day, they call it Totom, and everyone has their own Totom, it's called. And it might be a lucky item of clothing they wear. One person said, I'd never take someone to the first ever game. And I thought, well, this is going to lumber me here.
I'm coming
to the first game when I'm not watching United. But the players have it. Every manager has it over there. And you wonder over here whether the suspicion, the superstitions are the same. Some players say, always put one boot on after the other, always last to leave the tunnel and that. But interesting that fans do it as well, isn't it?
Yeah, but you tend to get the older type.
Being
more superstitious, or like, I'm not going in. It's like, well, Pat's a prime example. Doesn't miss a game. Home and away, abroad, everything. And the funny thing about that is, Man United never gave him a ticket.
He's
had his season ticket for God knows how many years, and he doesn't get a ticket in the ballot.
And that's ridiculous.
Well,
but it probably keeps him young. There's another Pat.
Oh, yeah, of course it keeps him young. It keeps everyone young.
Crerand.
Yes.
And I said to Paddy a few weeks ago, this keeps you young, all this.
Yeah, it does.
And you see it in him. And I've really sort of seen it the last 5 years. I thought, I'd love to have his passion and enthusiasm at his age in life.
Well, I look at Paddy, because I know him personally, and other people who were associated with his era. And obviously when you listen to Paddy and you have a chat with him, he's right direct and he's there. But he's having a proper discussion. And there's certain people back inside Old Trafford. And the other one is like Wilf McGuinness. And it was Wilf McGuinness when I went to a supporters do in Yorkshire. He was there. And when I listened to him, I knew him beforehand, but it's when I listened to him speak, I then understood about the old players, and especially about Munich. And then I realised about Bobby Charlton. And Bobby Charlton gets a bit a stick from United fans, which I think it's disgusting, right, about Bobby Charlton with his attitude and everything else. Now, I always remember Bobby Charlton, 1974. Walking past me outside Old Trafford. 72, 74, around that era. And we was getting autographs. And he just walked past us, wouldn't sign the autograph. But listening to Wilf McGuinness, I then understood about Bobby Charlton, which I didn't realise, is that the loss of so many people at Munich, he was there, he was in the plane, it had a dramatic effect on his personality. Right, which I didn't understand that side of it because I was passionate about Man United football and all that. And then I realised how Bobby Charlton seems aloof and doesn't want contact, doesn't want so much from people and all that, because his whole personality changed from that day. And Bobby Charlton, to me, has always been my best player, even though he didn't sign my autograph. But listening to Wilf McGinnis, then he understood about the character Bobby Charlton. I mean, me and Bobby Charlton would never mix. Bobby Charlton would it'd be horrified to even think that I was sat at the same table as him.
It'd be funny though if you booked on one of your trips, wouldn't it?
It would be funny. But then it'd be funny if I booked on one where he was on and sat next to him. You know, he'd ask for an upgrade. He'd probably be in the upgrade anyway. But the listening to the older players like Paddy, where you go back to, and Wilf McGinnis, that's what I love, because it's passion. That passion doesn't seem to come from the players, not just United or whatever. But then again, that might come back in a few years' time when they're older and they look back at what they could have done, what they could have achieved, and their arrogance in the way. Because, you know, there's no two ways about it. Today's football society, there is an arrogance, and that's brought on by the money.
They live in a bubble. They're not real
people. No, they're not real people.
A lot of players, it's only when they retire that they become semi-real people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I work closely with Andy Cole. When he played, yeah. I've told him this,
yeah.
It was hard work.
Yeah.
Now, he's a great fella.
Yeah. Well, they look that. You look at... I give an example where I've seen them both on the telly and that. One of them was Dwight York. You'd think he was a monster. But when you see him on the telly and you see he's just floating around. He's floating around at Old Trafford, at Carrington and things like that. Gary Neville. I mean, I read reports and I see people writing things about Gary Neville. How they hated him and all that. And they're ill having to say what a good way he's speaking. I mean, Gary's got a long way to go.
He's
brilliant, but he's got a long way to go to being, you know, one day what he's missed proper.
Yeah.
He's busy doing whatever he's doing. But when he sits and reflects at a longer day, he's got the passion. He's not got the Wilf McGinnis. He's not got your Paddy Crennan.
That comes with time.
But it's great to see certain players, and there's not many of them, acknowledging fans and whatever. And at the end of the day, the money does create a bubble, and it does create a divide between, you know, fact and fiction of what really goes on. And that's the problem with football now. I mean, we used to go to George Best's house when he used to be on Merseybank. I mean, my cousin used to live on Merseybank, so we'd go and visit me cousins and that. When we was kids, and we used to just stand on the corner in the avenue and wait for him, and he used to just go past, like, you know, never used to say anything, just stand at there, George Best, you know.
That was enough.
Yeah, that was enough. I mean, Wilf McGinnis, met him on the airport. He's actually read me book and that.
What did he say about your book?
Well, I didn't ask him that. It's just people who know him.
They told him,
And at some point, I'm hoping to go get invited over there. But that's in the future. But through proper United fans, it's not through whatever.
What have you made of Manchester City coming into money?
Well, it's just a joke. I'll never understand why they went and bought that club. Because they'll never recoup any money. They'll never get the kudos of the brand. They'll never get the respect what it is, because at the end of the day, if they'd have come here and bought United, for instance, they'd never have spent another penny. They'd never have spent another penny ever. Then they've got the biggest brand, because that's what they're after. It's baffling. It's baffling that they paid that much for the club 18 months after the so-called Thailand thief or whatever he is.
Yeah.
Sold it.
He is a thief.
Yeah, well, he is a thief. So he sold it for that much profit after 18 months. Where's the business sense in that? And at the end of the day, It just sums up City anyway, doesn't it? I mean, they can have them. Let them have them. Let the City fans have them.
Who do you see as United's main rivals?
Always Liverpool.
Yeah.
Never, ever change. Always Liverpool. Because when I first started going to Liverpool, you know about passion and hatred.
That be going on the train or...
anything. Yeah. Doesn't matter. Life, you come away from Liverpool with your life and your body intact, you had a result. Because they hate you. It doesn't matter that they're wearing shirts, scarves and all that. Right? They hate you. And that's just born out the rivalry. You can never beat that.
Are United and Liverpool sometimes so similar that people don't admit it? Both big clubs with...
No. Listen, regardless of Liverpool's trophies and success in the 70s, they were always behind us. Everyone is 10 years behind Man United. Doesn't matter how much money each club's got. Them across the road there in the council house, it doesn't matter. Everyone's 10 years... Listen, United on tour in Thailand. Everyone, every club... calling us chinks this and slant-eyed this. Here we are, what we're doing there.
Envious of our...
Well, they're all jealous, aren't they? They're all jealous. They're just jealous. And what it is, now, they all follow United. United are first in everything. They're 10 years ahead. You know, what you see here outside Old Trafford now, right, come back in 10 years. It's different. Where we're sat now, United will probably bought it in 10 years. All these shops, United will probably bought it. And trust me, you think I'm waffling, I'm not. You know.
You've seen how Old Trafford is. I've just walked past the ground now to come here. There was a road there 2 years ago. Now there's picnic benches.
Well.
Outside the ground. We're coming to the end of our time, Tony. Are you optimistic about United on the field this season?
I'm never optimistic. And in a way, I've never ever actually cared. It's just a matter of like, following the team.
You just go regardless.
Yeah.
Win or lose.
Win or lose, it's... Of course you want to win. I'm optimistic in certain ways. Like, we want to do this, we want to do that. But that's not really... comes into discussion with me, each games and that.
United are your team,
you go. And that's it. Yeah, of course it's great to win things. But you've got to remember, I followed United when they were rubbish. And everyone... of my generation, watched rubbish. But sometimes that rubbish was good, which sounds mad, because you saw attacking football and all that, and the passion was behind it. So it was a different world, you know.
Take one game, a highlight of all your time watching United.
Barcelona stood inside the Nou Camp with my son. When my son turned round to me, with 5-10 minutes to go, I said, "This is over, this lad." And he crossed his fingers, and he said, no. And then when we equalised, he was stood on the chair next to me, and the noise, what came out from everyone.
Sheringham's goal.
Yeah, I, my son was stood next to me, and I could not hear anything he was saying. And then when the second goal went in, I actually... I've never felt anything like it in my life. My heart, I thought it was going to die, to be honest, because of the roar, what came out. You actually could not hear anybody, but you could hear everything, which sounds mad, because my heart was actually coming out and my lungs were bursting. My ears had gone, and it took ages to actually hear someone say anything. Because of like the adrenaline, the blood, and like you're gasping. I couldn't breathe, and I mean literally couldn't breathe, because I couldn't say anything, because all the air had come out of my lungs and they were collapsing, and my heart was just like up in my throat, and it took me quite a while, like, to recover physically from that, and I suppose people. There was a lot of people like that. But to be stood with your son...
To win the treble.
I just hope that my son is able to take his kids and be in that position, which he has said to me. you know, he will take his kids to Munich and show them where all the thing is about the air crash. He will take them to a final, you know, and that's a good thing to be passed down. You know, I've stood at Munich with my son, stood at Munich in the best time of my life, and you're showing the next generation, you know, even though my son doesn't go, he hasn't got the time, he hasn't got the money. Life changes. It's been once or twice. But the thing is, you pass it down, that passion. And they're the good times, feeling that. And Barcelona, you can never, ever beat that. Never, that feeling. It's just unbelievable.
That's brightened up a cloudy Manchester morning. Yeah. Thank you for your time, Tony.
No, pleasure. Absolute pleasure, Mr. Straight Guy.
Okay, normally I do a link, but I'll do it while I'm sat with Tony now. Going to Stamford Bridge on Sunday. May even consider doing a podcast on the coach back to Manchester or the train back to Manchester. And we'll publish that next week. Until then, thank you very much. Mr. O'Neill, thank you very much.
Pleasure.